facility. There's just been major growth throughout, facility-wise, content-wise, and I would say use-wise. I think that one level of comparison I heard 3 or 4 months ago at a meeting when there were a number of universities represented at this meeting, a number of educators. Subject University of Alaska came up, and it was pointed out that the university now has one of the finest library facilities on the entire West Coast. This was a statement made by somebody not associated with the university. And certainly the facility is here. The same pertained to the size, the relative size of the collection, reference to the student body. So I think content-wise and facility-wise that we have made a major step forward. It certainly isn't the end. Now, with reference to use of the facility, I think this is certainly a point for discussion. How can we encourage more use of the library? Is this to be done by formal training of our students in one way or the other at the university level? We're going to rely on the high schools and the grade schools to better prepare students for the use. It's a pretty important point that certainly deserves some discussion later. And I'm sure that Mr. Ryberg will have some thoughts on this. Another point is, how do we keep a library current and up to date, just so that it is not only a storage for volumes of many kinds and many descriptions, if this is desirable? There are a number of other points been mentioned by members of the panel, and I think these are all worthy. I will not repeat any of these, so follow for this moment.
Thank you, Earl. As some of you have surmised, the way that they recruited this excellent panel was to say, we've invited Howard to chair it. He will start speaking. You won't have to say a word. Now, that's why I've been trying to keep quiet on the thing. That's the only way we got them here, you see. They thought that I would do all the talking, but I fooled you this time. Yesterday, when I arrived, I went to the academic dean's meeting. President Wood came in the room, and I was talking, of course, at the time, and his first comment when he came to the door, he says, Howard, are you still talking? I'm used to this, you see. I have saved, as the anchorman, Ted Ryberg, our director of libraries, who was the one responsible over most of the time of the construction of this building for this facility, and who is the one who all the time is concerned with the uses and abuses of the library. Ted.
Thank you. I think I want to start out by taking issue with a comment that Dr. Theophilus made. I can't imagine where he ever got the idea that librarians feel that libraries are equated with motherhood and God. One comment I would like to make is that, as you people know, we have just recently moved into this facility. We suddenly find ourselves having to do 180-degree turn. In the old library, I had threatened to stack books on the floor when we got to that point, and we certainly did stack books on the floor. I believe we were told that we had a certain height beyond above which we could not go, because if they went above that height, they would fall over the mezzanine and hit our patrons in the head. So we were limited to that point, but we did have them piled on the floors. It was almost a question of drawing straws for seats in the old library. And I think that, while none of us wanted to do it, we were not able to encourage the use of the library. Now, of course, that we have moved into this facility, for the first time in many years, we have a little bit of elbow room. And now we find that we have an entirely different problem, and I might tell you right now, none of us are about to trade our new problems for our old ones. But now, of course, we are faced with the, not the problem, certainly, because I don't think it's going to be a problem. We have to encourage people to come over to the library. We have to show them what we have available. We have to encourage their use of the library. I think already our statistics show beyond any shadow of a doubt that our students are making far greater use of the library now than they have in the past. And I feel quite certain that this will continue to increase. I would like to say a few things about the future, because I think that there is an excellent chance that the Elmer E. Rasmussen Library will probably be the last library the University of Alaska has to build. We're certainly going in the direction in our technology of miniaturization. I was just a little before the panel started, I was describing the National Cash Register's development of what they call photochromic microimages. And using their system, they reduce 400 8.5 by 11 size pages to 1 square inch. But now they haven't just reduced it, you see, they can bring it back to the normal size too, and they have reader printers developed now, so you just press the button and you have a hard copy to walk away with. Well, just think for a minute now what that will do. Of course, I think we're always going to have books, and I certainly hope that we will. I keep wondering why I'm a book collector, as I see that I've started to overflow my shelves at home and now putting books in the closet, and I think, you know, it's kind of ridiculous. Well, I guess we all have our hang-ups, and one of mine happens to be books, and I suppose that's fortunate. In addition to the miniaturization, I see that in a very short time, the trend is already clearly evident, that we're moving towards greater and greater cooperative units. We're going to have regional reference and resource libraries, I'm sure. I think that it'll be very few years before we probably will have direct connection to some of the major libraries, such as the Library of Congress, throughout the United States. I expect that the hardware is here. It needs a little bit of refinement, but there have been 3 or 4 experiments with telefacsimile. And these have proven to be feasible. They're not down to the point yet where they're economically feasible, and we always have to be aware, of course, of the dollar signs. But I expect that we will have almost instantaneous access to the wealth of information outside of this library also within a few years. I think we're always going to have a core of materials for our people to use here, but I think we'll be able to serve the needs of the university, certainly in its projected growth. I think we'll be able to, within this library, and I'm not talking about 50 years from now. We're almost there. I think we'll see some very interesting and far-reaching developments in the library technology shortly. One other thing I would like to comment on, and this is, as you probably have already noted, this building was designed and equipped to encourage independent study on the part of the students. And I think this, too, is a change that we have seen coming about, and we have tried to answer that need before it really is upon us, but the trend certainly is toward independent study, and we hope that this library is comfortable enough and inviting enough that the students will want to come to this library to study. I was wondering just what the balance on use and abuse would be. And I also know things that have been brought up as mentioned as abuses also have a big use factor there. For example, we want to make available as much material as possible that's needed by the people here. The more we do this, the more open we make it, of course, then comes the abuse side. Then we are indeed vulnerable to theft and misuse of the material. But I was pleased to see that we are not thinking only negatively here. And I hope that there will be some more discussion about the uses, mainly because it doesn't bring up so many embarrassing questions for me to answer about uses. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I have a question about abuses, and abuses of librarians. To what extent does the faculty abuse the librarians by putting in syllabi, term paper assignments, library work assignments for the students too late for the librarians themselves to serve the students adequately? Would you wish to address yourself to that possibility of faculty abuse of librarians?
Well, that's been known to happen in the past, and I expect that it will in the future. I've forgotten now who it was who mentioned the possibility of, I believe it was Gordon Wright, helping the faculty to understand how to use the library. And I think that this new facility has made this a lot more practicable already. We find that it's far easier to work with the faculty. And I have to say in their defense, although I admit, first of all, that you're quite right, they do abuse us. But we sometimes make it easy for them by not being able to provide the services that they need. Now we don't have that excuse anymore. So we hope that they'll come over and find out what we can do for them. And I think when they find out what we can do, they'll understand the parameters within which we can do it. So I hope that these things will not be as much of a problem in the future.
I'm wondering about the librarian's abuse of the students in the use of the library. To what extent their services are readily and happily available. I think one of the biggest abuses in the library is to be met by a gloomy clerk at the desk, a librarian or a reference or information one. This is one of the most discouraging things to me. It used to frighten me to death, also with President Burnell's telling one to keep quiet. I wonder if you don't abuse students' use of the library when you're telling them to keep quiet all the time and not talk to their date. And I even notice here that you've got the panels now divided so that you can't talk to your date while studying in the library. Is this an abuse of the library as a possible student activity bit? You want to make it a student center more, as I understand it. It's very hard to play footsie under one of those tables. As a student, I found this a rather exciting, titillating experience. Anyone to speak in behalf or against the librarian's abuse of students' use?
Well, I'm happy to say that it's not that way at the University of Alaska, that everyone I've come in contact with here, well, it's not. It's everybody. It's a very friendly atmosphere. There's no dividers can be gone around. No, at college, where I went to college before in Pennsylvania, the librarians walked around and like sentry almost. With their little whistles ready to blow at the students who were speaking. The atmosphere in this library is beautiful. I think that there are people everywhere to help you when you need it. And
overstaffed. Mr. Chairman, having made several comments along that line, I'd like to come back and echo what Linda has said. From my observation, we do have a very positive, a very a beautiful, if you will, staff here. Millicent Herring in Reader Services, sets the tone, and the comments that I have heard from students, the absence of complaints, if you will, which is a pretty good indicator, have all been positive, and I think the library staff should take great credit. I'll leave it at that.
Thank you. I remember that John Boyd brought up the problem of accessibility, and I'm concerned now with the abuse or lack of service, shall we say, to the student or faculty member by centralizing a library, making it necessary for him to come a considerable distance over campus to one central core, in contrast to departmental libraries or college libraries. Is a centralized library making for less use, if not abuse, of the time of the student and faculty member in terms of access to material?
Well, you know, there are certain phases of library service where, you know, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. And I think that this is one of them. Now, economically, a centralized library is the most efficient operation. It means that in addition to having all the materials in one location, ordinarily you can staff for longer hours, you can staff with more specialized personnel to give reference service, for example, better and in greater depth. But, of course, it does involve asking people to sometimes come great distances. We have this problem here, I think, with the division of the West Ridge. But I think, on the other hand, there are two factors. We have just as many faculty members, I dare say, who believe that they want to come to the library with the assurance that they will find what they are seeking there. They don't want to come into this library and find that they've got to go to another library, and maybe that's not where it is, but it happens to be in another library. And so they feel that you can waste just as much time in that way. Also, the traditional subject limits have been breaking down. We used to have chemistry and physics and biology, and they were pretty nice, neat little packages. But you see, now we have physical chemistry, we have biophysics, we have biochemistry, and all of these lines have broken down. So I think it's no longer feasible to talk in terms of departmental libraries if we're talking about departments in that sense of the word. I personally favor subject area libraries. I think a science library makes a lot of sense. I think a fine arts library would make a lot of sense. But even so, even when you break it up in that way, I think you must be careful to guard against making it difficult for faculty members. For example, let's take mathematics. Where do you put mathematics? I think practically every discipline in the university uses mathematics in one way or another. So if you put it with a science library, you're making it difficult for the social science scientists. And there are other subjects that are almost equally as broad. So I think that it's probably a matter of balancing the economics on one hand and the convenience on the other. If you can afford to duplicate widely, fine, let's make it convenient for everyone.
Lloyd, do you want to make a comment on accessibility?
I'm saving up a few comments here, but the last one is probably the most interesting, and that is the accommodation. There is a tendency at the moment for what Dr. Ryberg was talking about to be happening, in that the well, let me take a very specific, for instance. The Geophysical Institute Library, with which I am quite familiar, has a large number of books on mathematics. However, if you wanted to delve, because we use mathematics a lot, but if we wanted to delve into some of the more subtle aspects of finite topological spaces, something, if that's real, You don't find it in the Geophysical Institute library. You find it in the mathematics section of this library. I guess mathematics hasn't had its own. The point I'm making is that things tend to find their own level in these areas. For instance, we have very few books on chemistry. There are a couple, though, because we're interested in geochemistry, but, of course, our close liaison with the geology department puts most of that in the geology department. So I think the main thing I'm trying to get at is we have to remain very flexible in particular needs, and especially here we're faced with a particular problem on this campus where, as you say, we're moving parts of us, we're moving up to the West Ridge and so on. So I think it's a matter of playing it by ear, but keeping a very close tab on what's going on.
I think we're terribly scared again because of the tradition of libraries and librarianship, scared of this duplication in view of cost-benefit. I'm terribly aware that so many books are published and are promptly bought by the main library, by Marine Science, Geophysics, and Institute of Archaeobiology, all bang. And I think with every justification, a $20 book may be justified in four locales on a campus. And I'm absolutely convinced that we think of a book as being such an expensive item because the total cost of books is so high that we completely lose sight of whether or not it is worth somebody who may well, and we hope soon, be earning, let's say, $100 an hour, a good, competent teacher, to have to walk for half an hour, $50, in order to have access to a $5 book. Why not give him one? And let him throw it away, as long as he doesn't throw it on the environment.
Where do these teachers get $100 an hour?
I said we were hoping. Our legislature is still in session.
Probably the biggest misuse and abuse of the library is that Peter Ray brought out to begin with, that which is not used at all when the facility is available. I think we've defined a problem here in the use of abuse depending upon the definition of what functions one feels a library should perform, whether it move closer towards the student center, whether it be a depository of books, or whether it be a depository with non-books materials such as films and film strips and music records, etc. The problem of accessibility or lack of accessibility to the user, the problem of keeping a library up to date, both in the terms of purchase of new materials and of removing the old that might clutter up the place. I think these are just a beginning, really, to the uses and abuses, and hope that many of you will remain to discuss among yourselves and members of the panel your attitudes towards the uses and abuses of the library, because I think that by our discussion, we might learn better in relation to our own personal behavior how to enjoy and profit from this thing that has been made available to us by our society. I want to thank members of the panel very much and you for being so patient. Thank you.